They say marketing is a madman's game. So now we turn it over to the marketing madman with Nick Constantino and Trip Job on Extra 106.3 FM.
Welcome to the Marketing Madman on Extra 106.3. Nick Constantino here. And finally, after all the hype, we are going to talk to Miss Lauren Andrews, founder of EBSO. Lauren, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Being because I put fake time constraints on you, we're going to move kind of backwards. So first off, talk a little bit about EBSO. Talk about what went into founding it. And then we're going to go back to the beginning of the career and all the little things you learned that put you in a position to do so.
Absolutely. So I started off, you know, in my career always wanting to be an owner of a company, a CEO. My father and my grandfather both owned their own companies. Last summer, had a great opportunity to start my own agency. So, you know, sat down with the hubby on the beach with a few margaritas in our system and said, if I'm not going to do it now, when am I going to do it? And really, with all the background and knowledge I've had, it was time to jump. And I think any other time in my life, I've been scared to do it. But it really, timing was everything and it felt right.
Yeah, so we're gonna catch back up to this point of what you do now, but give the quick mission statement or a competitive advantage of what's different about what you do and why the service is so needed.
Certainly, EBSO is short for Event Solutions. So from the moment you start thinking about hosting an event all the way through it actualizing, EBSO can step in and help you. So we're scalable. We can do anything from registration, site selection, event management, sponsorship management, expo hall management. We do it for events of all sizes. So it could be executive retreats, it could be large conventions and citywides, it could be product launches or sales kickoffs, a little bit of everything. We do it all.
Yeah, and the longer in your career you've been in marketing, you know that inevitably something's going to always go wrong. And if it's one thing, you're freaking lucky, because usually it's 40 things and it's because there's something that happens every time that no one has ever heard of or thought of beforehand. So I think that it is a service that is probably more needed than people know. And that if you work for a company that's throwing one of these, don't be ashamed to go find somebody who's done more, because you've only lived in your small little bubble. You don't see it from the outside.
Well, and I think the greatest thing about my background and my history is that I'm a third party, which means I've worked with corporate, association, nonprofit. I've worked with startups all the way through Fortune 500 companies. So whether you're on a budget and you're trying to do this thing conservatively, or if you're really trying to wow and have that experience of that A-list entertainment or that event that people are walking away just saying, I can't wait to come back next year. I've done everything in between.
And I think as an impartial third party, you could also be like, look, for the amount you're trying to spend, the wow factor you think you're going to get is not there. People, these things are a dime a dozen, especially after COVID, when everyone had to catch up with the demand. There's a show every day. And what people give away is getting higher, and the acts that they're bringing in, and everything's getting bigger and bigger. But the one fundamental that has not changed is people care about ease in and out, logistics. Mm-hmm. They want everything to be easy. And the more complicated you make it, doesn't matter how big of a superstar it is, the more complicated you make it. And I think that's what lost on people all the time. These are business people. Efficiency and all these things are incredibly important. So that being said, we already talked too long. Let's go back. We're going to go back in the time machine. So first off, I see that you went to Georgia State University. Go Panthers.
I did. Go Panthers. And they had a big win on Saturday. So congratulations.
They did. First time they beat a ranked team, an SEC team, a big team, big five team in a while. And I think my wife went there, and we were lucky enough that when Georgia State initially launched their football program, we helped broadcast a lot of their games. So I got to know their ADs and everybody. So still to this day, and no one's going to believe me when I say it, I don't care. And my favorite sporting event out of all the things I've been, World Series, Super Bowls, everything, was Georgia Southern came to play Georgia State at the old stadium. And I got to sit courtside, and it was the craziest thing I've ever seen. It was the most fun. It was tight. It was a great game. Everyone was surfing across, it was swag surfing. It was so much fun. So talk a little bit about the degree and talk about those first couple of years when you're entry level in your career.
Certainly. So I went to Georgia State, where I was a marketing major, and part of being a marketing major is to take electives in other college courses. So I took hospitality law. Why that struck me, I don't know, but at the first day of class, the professor gets up and she's the chief legal officer for the Ritz-Carlton Hotel Company. So I don't think anything of it. I just enjoy the class. And at the end of the class, she says, I really think that this is where you're meant to be. And so she worked for Mr. Schulze himself, which is a huge honor in our industry. And she made a phone call into HR, and that's how I got to the Ritz-Carlton Hotel Company.
Yeah. So as a, let's say naive or ignorant, I don't know how to say this, but my understanding of the Ritz-Carlton is it was the single most empowered staff of people that there were in anything in hospitality. And they were given numbers like $1,000 a day to make somebody's day better. I'm sure once it was bought out, I'm sure a lot of this has changed. But I think that when it was in its core, wasn't that an important part of this?
It was, and I'd actually like to say that I was just at the Ritz-Carlton Grand Cayman this past weekend having this exact conversation, asking the general manager if they still have that $2,000 per guest empowerment, and they do. So just a shout out to Ritz-Carlton for still keeping that as a core value, because what's most important at the Ritz-Carlton is that your guests feel that genuine care and comfort. And sometimes you come across somebody and you can clearly tell that their day has been affected, whether it be from something that's done on the property or something that's not. And you just have that empowerment to change that person's day.
Sure. And I think it's important because you're making lifelong fans. And, you know, now it's all about the loyalty programs. And it's kind of a little bit more of a trick to make these fans. You almost box them in so they can't leave. And when they think they're at their best moment, you just cut all their benefits. I'm not talking to anyone specifically. Delta. But I think that, that old school mentality, and that's why the name is so synonymous. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is as well known of a name as there is probably anywhere in the world. And that is for good reason. So talk about the day to day there. Talk about what you started learning there. Talk about that process, because I'm sure it was a huge part of what you do today.
Certainly. So when I came into the Ritz-Carlton, I came straight from college. So picture this. I did not go to high tea. I was not somebody that entertained clients of this nature. So it was a great learning curve for me. But I just have to say, for that hotel company, my favorite was Chef. Chef pulled me behind the scenes and said, I'm going to teach you how to order food when you're hosting clients. I'm going to teach you the wines that you should be ordering. So I really appreciated that he saw that as an area for growth for me, for sure. So I enjoyed being a part of a team. I was a college athlete, and you know, going into the Ritz-Carlton, you really felt like you were part of the best sports team out there.
Cool.
You felt as though you knew your colleagues' kids' names and their wives' names, and you were in it for each other. And if you saw somebody else, if there's a quick turn, you're making sure that you're dropping everything to be able to change sheets and change beds or go, you know, even though I was in sales, I was in the banquet room helping serve plates on one of our biggest Meals on Wheels fundraisers. So that's what I loved the most, is there wasn't this separation of duty of like, oh, you work front desk, or oh, everybody was one team.
Yeah, I love it. So 2 points there. One, you bring it back to sports. So a couple of years ago, I got to go to Clemson when Clemson's athletic facilities were top notch in the world. And you walk through and it's literally like a Ritz-Carlton. They don't want you to leave. And one of the reasons Clemson went on these runs is the kids were so part of the family. Everybody knew everyone. They got their haircut there. Now all these teams have progressed, but that's what I think of immediately, is that they want you to be there. It's not like their hotel where you're staying overnight, you're in at midnight, you're out 2 a.m. They want you to be there. They want you to be around people. And then Chef, isn't that an eye-opening experience? When I was 21, I had a girlfriend that I was dating, and her dad was very wealthy, and he gave me that same crash course. It started because we were running late to a dinner, and I'm like, dude, we're an hour late. What are you doing? He goes, hold on, I'll handle it. Calls the restaurant and goes, hey, I'm running an hour late. Well, we can't seat you. What's the most expensive bottle of wine you have? Yeah, leave it on the table. I'll see you in an hour. And hangs up the phone, and I'm like, okay, this guy and I can hang out. And he taught me wines and, you know, which wines to get and which wines were overpriced and how to eat and how to do these things. And, you know, I don't have the money to live to the way that he showed me to do so, but it has probably influenced so much of my life, where I was punching above my weight at my age because I was in the room with people who did those things, and they're like, that's pretty good, dude.
Yeah.
So that is a very empowering, and it's so underrated because we don't think of those little nuanced things.
Right.
But when you're at a business meeting, what you order is immediately recognized by everybody at the table, and the kinds of wine, and when you're ordering bourbon, and you know, maybe don't start with a triple on the rocks. I'm not talking to young me, but yes, I am. But all right, so. So let's go through, you went through this, you were at the Ritz, this huge background, you were learning how to be hospitable, but you're more importantly learning how these departments work and how hospitality works at Fire. So what's next?
So I was fortunate enough to really succeed in the sales department. So I worked on everything from corporate business, like I said, up to entertainment market, to the sports marketing, as well as pharmaceutical and citywide. So that is really where I got the foundation of learning all different types of events and what it takes to host all different types of high level, businesses and A-list entertainers and things of that nature. So that was really, I'd say, the most fun part.
Yeah. And I think for most people, it's very hard to comprehend what that echelon looks like. So, for example, in the Microsoft building downtown, there is a room for the CEO who's come in three times in 5 years. There's a whole room with a custom restaurant for this dude for when people come into town. And it is the top shelf. I mean, there's everything you have. So talk about some of the people that you interact with. We don't have to go into details. But talk about some of the people you interacted with. What surprised you about dealing with some certain celebrities and stars? And what kind of what sectors did you like the best? Just give some of the fun stuff, because it can be fun, but it's also daunting because you're always around people who you're on edge. And
yes. So I'd say one of the ones that stands out is people always ask, you know, who was the most demanding? And so for that, it would be Mariah Carey.
You're not the first person to say that.
I know, right?
You're not opening anyone's eyes right now.
Right. But what I'd say is I also understand from a Ritz-Carlton standpoint, I mean, she's probably sleeping on the road 300 days a year. So if this room isn't set up the way she needs it in order for her to perform or for her to go, you know, record her music, she needs a little bit of a taste of home. So yes, she definitely...
And her travel patterns have probably changed, considering she has one Christmas song that makes her $25 million a year. So, like,
it's my favorite song.
It's everyone's favorite song. There's no song that is more synonymous with anything in the world than All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Yep.
And she will make $20 million. So she's like, I'm not touring. Yep. So it's probably different now. Who else? Who else is on that list of people that either surprised you or that you thought would be something that wasn't?
Yep. So I'd say that's my second is always who was the most surprising. And for me, it was Britney Spears.
Okay.
So she came to stay with us when she was married to Kevin Federline. And she was pregnant.
Yeah.
No one knew she was pregnant.
Those were dark Britney days. That's so before she shaved her head and went nuts. But there was buildup that led to that.
So I had to sign an NDA because she was pregnant and no one knew she was pregnant. So I had to walk around at all times with what looked like a margarita, but it wasn't a margarita. And we had a club appearance that night.
Way to cover your pregnancy. Have a fake drink in your hand.
But we, in terms of Ritz-Carlton, we went off property with them too if they needed us to. So I really went to a club appearance carrying her virgin margaritas and pouring it up on as if, you know, she was still having that party lifestyle. So that was definitely one of the more surprising. So laid back. Laid back. I'm not kidding. Her and Kevin, when I got their rider, it had four things on it. When you have somebody of this stature, it's usually pages long.
So let's talk about a rider, because in my career, one of the first things I did was I started doing riders. We were bringing concerts into when I lived in Vegas, and some of these people, the riders, were just, I mean, they needed granola from a specific farm in this place. It needed to be from here, and God forbid that this granola wasn't from this Portland farm, the world would end. So talk about a rider a little bit. Just give you an idea of what some of the crazy things you did see were.
Okay, so one of my favorite riders was Maroon 5. They played a joke on me, and I did not realize it. They said that they only wanted green M&Ms. So I had to go to just about every Publix, Kroger, Target you could find, buy every bag I could find, and hand pick out the green M&Ms. And when they arrived, they literally laughed and said, "We just wanted to see if you'd do it." And we were close enough at that time, because that was about their third time staying with me, that I looked at them and I said, "That'll be the last time we do that," right? Like, because that took a good amount of time.
But it's crazy. So my second part of my career, actually, it was really the first part of my career. Let's skip a little bit of California. I lived in Vegas, and I started as a personal chef in Vegas, and then I worked in radio stations and hospitality in Vegas. So because of the age I was and just the way Vegas worked, I was a local. I was bold. I always had pretty girls with me, and I got in everywhere for free. I was in every private party. I was everywhere. So my experience with these people was about eight drinks deep and different. Like, I got to hang with Britney Spears, and she was the coolest, easiest person, just there, just not the picture where she's partying, dancing on tables. She was in her chair with her closest friends, and everyone was just cool as can be. But a lot of those experiences were also the hard part was already done, right? Now you're in a nightclub blowing off steam. You don't need to be on top of you. But that being said, these people's lives suck. Once people recognizes you, every ass in the world is trying to go pop up, get in a picture, take a selfie. So I actually saw it from the other side, where I was like, oh my God, leave these people alone. It's got to be awful. That was just as the rise of TMZ and the paparazzi really started taking off. And it was atrocious to see it. So I think, did you see it from their eyes ever and see why that they go through these hoops and kind of feel bad a little bit for them?
Absolutely. So I was hosting an event in Orlando, and I was having what's called a chef's table at the Ritz-Carlton Grand Lakes, which means you're behind the scenes. And the phone rang, and the chef answered it, and it was Michael Jordan. He was in the presidential suite. He was there to play golf. He was not there on business. And he said, "I'd like to have some, you know, can I come down and hang out with you guys?" So Michael Jordan had dinner with us. And then afterwards, we were going to go out to the bar. And he said, "I want to go ahead and say in advance, I'd love to be able to stay with you all. But what's going to happen?" Exactly. And it was. I saw the worst side of humanity. I saw C-level executives pouring out from the ballroom where there was an 800-person dinner, and the entire ballroom flooded out in a matter of 5 to 10 minutes. And they were just screaming at him and hollering at him. And again, I go back to, he was there on pleasure. He was there to play golf. He wasn't there to sign autographs. And so I really felt bad for him. But his bodyguard did a great job getting him out. But it really does make you sad to think. And he even said, you know, sitting up in the hotel room is, you know, it's not boring. It's lonely.
Yeah.
It's lonely.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that you kind of learn is that you got to treat people like people. Mm-hmm. And once they realize you do and that you're that group, they're always more comfortable with you. So this facility, because of the athletes that come by here, mm-hmm. we're always put on alert. Like, oh my God, Matt Ryan's coming. And once you train your people, like, look, no one's saying talk to the guy, talk about the game. And then if afterwards he's comfortable, then ask to take a picture. Don't walk on like a freaking hyena. Yep. And we've done a pretty good job. I mean, we have some of the biggest names in sports that are here all the time and they like coming up here. Now, mm-hmm. you could see by these facilities, this is a different place. But I think most people, the advice I'd give, and you probably share this, is when you're around people of that nature, they are so used to be treating like celebrities, treat them like people. Mm-hmm. Make sure you see it from their eyes and what they're going through, and it'll be a lot easier to deal with them.
Absolutely. In terms of when we have those A-list celebrities, we have VIP green rooms, and that's what I typically oversee for that exact reason. I talk to them like normal human beings, and I talk to them about their kids or where they live. I don't talk to them about their favorite show, their favorite concert, their favorite. It's really just talk to them like normal people.
Yeah, and you don't need to tell Mariah that she didn't hit that high F the way she used to. Like, let's sit back of judging Michael Jordan on his time as a wizard, right? He gets enough of that. He reads the newspaper no matter what. These guys all have egos. I don't care what anyone says on that note. All right, so talk a little bit about things that would happen around the Ritz or in your career, big events, sports, about times where the stakes are so much higher. Like, I give you an example. Super Bowl in Atlanta, the stakes were as high as they were. The most important people were here. The city wanted to get it again. You're putting on a show, so everything has to be, and perfect's never the word. Nothing's ever perfect. Mm-hmm. Anyone who thinks it is a fool. If you expect perfection, just not happening. Whatever, if you want perfection, triple your budget. But talk a little bit about some of those big experiences, some of the twists and turns, and advice to people of how they can get involved with some of those, because a lot of people, it's your dream. That's why so many people volunteer to go to the Masters. I think once you're in this industry long enough, you become like kind of a little like, whatever, I went to the Masters, who cares? But for most people, that's the dream of life dreams, and you're just kind of blowing off like, oh, I get free drinks, wah, pish posh. So talk a little bit about just what you saw and what advice you would give to people to kind of play in that ballgame.
Certainly. So, you know, I think for me, it's also has to be around product launches. So something that nobody else has seen out in the market yet, but we're, you know, under NDA, so I've known about it for 3 to 6 months, and so I've gotten the buildup. So whether it's ordering the swag or whether it's the celebrity that's going to come show up and is going to launch this product, or whether it be the venue in which it's hosted in, like some of the venues that we can get into are private, you know, showrooms of celebrities who it might be their private car collection, and they're willing to, because they're friends with the CEO or whatever the case may be. So I'm trying to think of one specific one that comes to mind. I mean, I've been so fortunate to be a part of so many. The ones that I've enjoyed the most, though, probably are more around like franchisees. Like, for instance, Inspire was one of my biggest clients. So Dunkin' had a really big launch coming out of COVID. They hadn't hosted in 3 to 4 years. The demand, the pent up and actually the shoes I'm wearing today are Pumas, and they actually have like the Dunkin' coffee in them.
Cool.
And so these were custom made for the staff that were walking around. So that was a lot of fun. And
That is, so if you are from the outside looking in, and I've had this conversation with many CMOs, okay, it is one of the hardest things to get right. And the reason is, no matter how much you spend, you will never see that value returned if you are looking at this in straight dollars, right? It's hard to measure influence and brand equity and all of those things. But at the same time, it is such an expectation of the bigger the company is that it's a really hard thing to nail.
Certainly. So most companies host every year, if not every other year. Dunkin' hosts just about every 4 years, and it's an international event. So from that standpoint, you have franchisees coming in from all over the world.
All walks of life. Everyone that owns a Dunkin', you're like, I don't even know how you own a business. It's just a different world. Like the communication, it's just the way what you expect of people of that. It's probably an interesting assortment of people coming in.
Yes, but I'd say in terms of doing all these different franchises over the years, the Dunkin' franchisees were my favorite because they came in. It was in Las Vegas. You want to talk about folks that came in to business and pleasure, like they definitely came in ready to celebrate their brand, but at the same time get to network with each other and the trade show hall actually had a conveyor belt. It was the largest conveyor belt that's ever been done on a show floor of the donuts going you know, all the way through the whole time.
Like a sushi bar, you just pick off what you want out of like one of those conveyor belts. So that's awesome.
And then Baskin Robbins was also there. So they're making their top creations when it comes to what's going to go out into market. And so for me, that's the excitement level of being able to see or touch or smell something that isn't out there yet. And then the franchisees get to vote on what they want to go out to market. So for me, that's my excitement level. That's where I kind of geek out.
And I think that if you look at it in the scale, the sense of the huge scale of business, if you can get 5% more out of those employees because they'd leave that place excited, that pays for itself immediately. But again, most people don't think that way. But that's what you're trying to do, right? You're selling the sizzle.
I call myself a walking advertisement because I love swag. So for me, I'll wear the shoes. And we were talking about a little bit earlier, just in the sense of marketing. When I'm walking around, I have my Arby's hat on and people are like, oh my God, that's awesome. I don't even recognize it. I'm like,
oh,
that's Arby's. But
good for you.
I'm a brand ambassador. My clients, I really believe in, and I want to be able to tout what they did on show floor as long as it is covered and they can allow me to talk about it. But nonetheless, it's a lot of fun what I do when you do what you love.
That is very good for you. I tend to be the opposite of nostalgic and I just, I keep the stuff, but it's not on display anywhere. Yeah. Like once the event ends and that thing done, I'm on to the next thing. I don't know what it is, but there's events, clients, I have stuff, custom shirts. I get all that stuff all the time. And like, I don't know what it, now that being said, I have 180 active clients. So I'm going to always piss somebody off that if I wear their thing and not somebody else's. So I got to be a little more careful, but I think it's great. I think when you can actually show that you believe in a brand and you're part of it and then you wear it and you're a spokesperson, that's another thing that will differentiate you from everybody else. Because most people look at it as a transactional relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the biggest problems if you look at something like digital advertising. It's become so transactional that they're like, look, but here's your formula. It's like, wait a second. You don't know anything about the company. You don't know, how hard is it to keep an NDA for 3-6 months? I mean, you can't tell anybody. By law, you can't tell anybody.
So even we can't even tell the venue sometimes all the way up until 30 days before. So these chefs keep asking me, what are you preparing? What are you serving? Yeah. And I was like, we can't yet. We're
and
not
they
ready
know
to
you're the guy
you.
That knows. So they're right. offering. You got the KFC recipe in the safe over there. So.
Two different manufacturers make that batch is what I heard on this show. So. Good to know.
But it's just a crazy. It is an odd world, and it feels like you're in this like Illuminati type world. But realistically, one of the things, these events have become so much more frequent and so much more common now that it is like you see kind of, we used to joke and call them the normies, but you see the normies kind of becoming more a part of this because they bought their way in, or there's more ways to get access to where this used to be a pretty closed domain. Mm-hmm. It's getting easier and easier to get in, which I think actually makes it a lot harder.
So in terms of attendee engagement is something we're really working on. And for some of my clients, they might have been citywide pre-COVID. They might have been, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people. But now they're being a bit more selective with the invitations they send out because they recognize you're going to get more, to go back to marketing. If you bring in these folks, you can do a higher level event, then you're probably going to get more spend coming out of it. And I think that's the one thing going into COVID and coming out of is the importance of face-to-face meetings.
Yeah.
Done right.
And I think the good thing is that the COVID world made people get better at the, hey, you can also come online and see this. Because if you can't attend, and then they put on that show, they have the really important people there, and then the rest of the company gets to see how much fun everyone's having.
Right.
But they've done a good job at that. So when we get back from the break, we're going to fast forward a little bit now, talk about the company, talk about what starting a company is like, talk about what your day-to-day is, and hopefully give some tips to people who do want to enter this space. So you've been listening to The Marketing Madman on Extra 106.3, and we'll be right back.
Now back to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3 FM.
Welcome back to the Marketing Mad Men on Extra 106.3. Nick Constantino here with Lauren Andrews, the founder of EBSO. All right, let's talk EBSO a little bit. Let's talk about, so we talked about you took the leap. We've kind of built up all of the different experiences and all the oh crap moments that made you realize what people do wrong so you can help give them the guidance to do right. So talk a little bit about when somebody would need your services / should need your services / actually calls for your services. Because I imagine those are three very different things.
Yes, I feel like I need to break that up. But from a standpoint of many people don't even know a company like mine exists. So they think they call a hotel, they book the dates and the food and beverage shows up and the audiovisual shows up and oh my gosh, I have a great meeting in place.
Who's getting you back from the airport? Who's making sure that you go to the offsite events and there's so many parts. So that's just off the top of my head.
Yes. So that's, I think, the starting point is the minute you start thinking about an event and you think, what city am I going to host? How much is it going to cost? What like you were just saying, in terms of arrival, where are people coming in from? Is it easy to get in there? There's all kinds of questions you got to think of from a site selection standpoint that many people don't. Because, yeah, you want to host in Miami in January. That sounds great, but your budget's $150, but you want a five-star hotel. That is not going to happen. So, you know, I'm here to really brainstorm and have a 5 or 10 minute conversation that can help you lead down the right path. So for those site selection services specifically, that's where I shine. Like, I love negotiating. I love the relationships I have with over 200 national sales worldwide. And that's where I get to kind of shine. I was just telling a friend of mine this morning, I went down to Grand Cayman with a client this weekend at the Ritz-Carlton. And while we were down there, I said, we should go see the Kimpton. And I know you had Caesar on here maybe a few weeks ago. Yeah. So shout out to IHG, because the Kimpton product, I said, let's just go over there and see it. And it was one of those, the client had never experienced something like that before. And now I was able to put two and two together and say, we're already going to be on the island. And now we have two strong proposals.
Well, I think that's a really good point, because one of the things I've come to realize is, like, the what you see of a hotel here might not be representative of what it is internationally. Like, some people just have stronger presences internationally. Mm-hmm. Some places that you would think are expensive, I think until you start seeing what these things look like, you know, it may be cheaper to go down internationally and show up in Cancun than it is to fly to freaking Utah. I mean, you have to open your eyes to those things and see those things to realize that. And I'm sure the experience you have has really helped point people in the right direction and open their eyes to things that they would have never thought of.
Or when somebody says, but that's crazy because I just got a great sleeping room rate. I was like, what was your food and beverage minimum? And do you know how much it's going to cost to do XYZ? How much was that meeting room rental? And I just start adding it up and saying the grand package of it all may not be the best fit for your budget. Or opposite, you know?
Yeah.
I worked at Ritz-Carlton. There were times I was on site visits where a client would say, I know that I can't afford it, but I still want it. And I'd say, okay, let's become creative. Let's go sit down with Chef. Let's do this. Let's do that. So I think I didn't realize that problem solving was one of the greatest strengths I had until I started my own company.
But, and I also tell you, once you get a reputation for being, can I say ball buster? We're saying it anyway. To being one, people negotiate with you differently. Mm-hmm. And they know that you know, because, I'm not saying they're trying to put wool over your eyes, but you're right. Most people are like, oh, look, my room rate's cheaper. Okay, but what about the 30% that they charged on top of your gratuity that you weren't paying attention to? What about all these things? You have to see it all laid out. But I think if they know that you're meticulous and know for those things, they're a little bit more worried about getting to the bottom line, which speeds up the negotiation process.
So my previous company, we were the corporate meetings and incentives top 25 agency. So what that put us on the map for 16 years was, this company knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
Okay. So from that standpoint, I also sit on customer advisory boards for first tier cities like San Francisco, Scottsdale, Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Destination cities.
Yes, destination cities. So in that mind, I'm well-traveled. I work in a variety of market segments. So yes, when you get on the phone and you just pick up the phone and you have negotiations as opposed to hiding behind email, which we'll get into tips and tricks, or what I wish I had told people who were starting off in college, you know, there's little things like that. You know, it's a relationship business.
Yeah, and most things are. Okay, so screw everything I said previously. Let's do those tips now because I have some questions.
Okay.
Give us some tips. Some tips you would have told yourself, what you tell the people getting in the field. Let's do 2 minutes of that because I got some more fun questions after.
Okay, so thinking about coming from college and getting straight into it. So I'd say don't hide behind email. Okay, if you have to email back and forth more than 2 or 3 times, you should be picking up the phone. I think face-to-face negotiations, if you can do it, is absolutely
my rule of thumb is face-to-face is best. Zoom is next best because at least you can see the person and see facial gestures and stuff like that. Next, you do it over the phone. If you have to do it with email, you're probably not getting the business anyway, so just stop.
All right. And then I'd say also what I'm really leaning into hard right now is AI.
Okay.
So for me, whether I'm working on a proposal or whether I'm responding to something that I feel like, this coming across the right way? Or even if it's brainstorming sessions,
AI is my
coworker.
We use it for the show, for everything. And I think once it learns your tone and voice and what you actually want out of it, it is a very powerful tool. Yeah. But you got to start using it and you got to understand what you want out of it. Like, write me a proposal for this client is going to fail every time. Here's my proposal from this client. Make this for this client. Might work a little bit better. Hey, how do I soften the tone so I'm not such an aggressive douchebag? Mm-hmm. It actually understands that.
Yes.
That it can do, which is crazy. What else you got?
So I'm just trying to think, communications is everything. So whether that be making eye contact, a good firm handshake.
Absolutely.
I'm telling you right now, it's the best thing my dad taught me going into business, good firm handshake. Whether it be written communications are important as well, making sure this is the Ritz-Carlton coming out in me. Exactly.
There's so much nuance to how you can reverse words to change tone. And most people actually, what they think is that they're not demanding enough. They're too passive aggressive to get the point out that they think they're getting, and they're not actually asking for anything. And you can't get a no if you're not asking. I train my salespeople all the time. A no is as good as a yes, because it's better than a maybe. A maybe is the worst.
It drags it along.
It drags everything along. Wastes company resources, everything.
Always prepare that your emails can be forwarded. So learn that one time the hard way, in the sense of I sent something to an internal and then it got back to the client. And not that it wasn't anything the client didn't already know, but it was, if you don't want it to get back to somebody, don't put it in writing, pick up the phone and call.
And I'm always a big fan. I do believe call all the time, but always follow up a call with an email, because people can forget calls. So the second touch point of, first of all, it gives you a second reason to remember. Two, just following up via email. And I know people say don't say just following up, but all you're trying to do is make sure that person remembers, and now it's in writing that they agreed to it via, because it is very easy to be like, you didn't tell me that.
Every single one of my clients knows we could have a call, but if there's a major decision made on the call, I'm going to be sending a follow-up, or I'm going to say at the end of the call, if you could just shoot me that one sentence, then we'll be good. Because also, you have how many conversations a day?
That's the lawyer, though. That's because you did hospitality law.
Yes,
Owner's a lawyer, and I would never be the person you think was negotiating contracts here. The amount of intellectual property contracts I've had to look over is insane.
Yes.
And what you learn from it is there are gotcha words in every contract. And when you find those gotcha words and you catch them, the lawyer's like, uh-oh.
Yes.
Better cut look back here. All right. So we got that. So let's have some fun. Favorite three cities in America to host an event and why?
Nashville.
Okay.
I think just from a standpoint of...
But not enough hotels, right? Aren't there not enough hotels?
Oh, no. Their pipeline is getting full.
Good.
So there's been a JW that's open. There's a Conrad that's open. There's a Four Seasons that's brand new there. I mean, they have definitely increased.
Good.
So yes, Nashville is one of the top cities. I love Scottsdale. I love being outside.
Yeah.
I just love the beauty of the nature there. You don't have to...
You got to prepare people, though, because 123 is a different kind of heat. Like 119, I lived in Vegas. 115 was hot. You get to Scottsdale, it's pushing on 120, 121.
Yep.
It's a different kind of heat. It's like stay inside. The concrete should be white. It's a different kind of heat.
Yep, I agree. I'd say San Diego, just getting on the water. Like, it's just such a beautiful city. The weather is perfect year-round.
Yep.
I'm going to go four cities. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Most people say they lost Vegas, that they don't care to go back because they go there so much. But from an events perspective,
easy.
They have everything. And we have such great partners out there that it makes it. Las Vegas is always consistently one of my top cities.
They also forget how much is Las Vegas. For example, you go up to Red Rock, the Red Rock Casino overlooking the Red Rock Valley, and you have all the hills and the mountains in the background. Like, you can be in June, Mount Charleston has snow on it. Like, people don't think of just the topography of Vegas and how different it is to what most people have seen in their lives. So, all right. So before we end, favorite international city to do anything?
Oh, loaded. London, surprisingly, it wasn't going to be on the top of my list, but London was a big surprise for me, just in the sense of our attendees. Everything was different. What they wanted to do, what they wanted to experience, what the city could provide. London really kind of surprised me. If I was going smaller and more intimate, I'd say Grand Cayman just really surprised me this past weekend. Very international market. Finance is their number one. Exactly.
Yeah, a lot of we don't want to say illegal bank accounts, but untraceable bank accounts. How does that sound?
Yes.
That's why people go down there. Let's call it what it is.
A friend of mine just told me when he went to open his bank account down there that when they said you need to have 150 to open it, he said, not a problem. They were like, no, 150,000.
Oh, 1,000.
He was like, holy goodness.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been great. We breezed through it as usual. Lauren, I appreciate it. And for everyone out there, it's a crazy industry. If you think you're going to get in overnight, you're going to have to work your butt off. You're going to have to know the right people. You're going to have to be aggressive and assertive of what you do. But it is a fun industry to be in. You've been listening to the Marketing Madman on Extra 106.3, and we'll catch you next week.